Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
I never admit defeat here on the show, so you fight the A-Law, and the A-Law will win. Good morning to you. It's After Hours with A-Law Radio with Amy Lawrence. I cannot believe it's almost a year. It's divisional weekend, and I know, it's only Thursday morning, so I need to put a pipe in it. Put a fork in it. What is it called when you have
both
to?
Way. That's both.
Now, see, I suck at cliches. The one I'm thinking about is the one where you stuff it. You know, you
could stick a fork in it.
You can pipe down. But stick a fork in it is when you're done. I'm not done. I need to, like, put a cork in it. Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, you can put a pipe in it. I've heard that's used.
But I don't think that's accurate. Put a pipe in it. This is something about, that's how, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Right.
So there's one, but the put a cork in it is about, like, bottling it up. Oh, there we go. That's about bottling it up and keeping it contained in the bottle. Huh. Right. So I get way too excited because we still have days to go. So that's what I was looking for. But if you ever listen to the show, you know that I am, I'm not good at cliches. I get them wrong all the time. So I combine them. One time I said wet behind the ears. No, green behind the ears.
Right, because wet behind the ears is the actual statement.
Oh, so then it was green behind the ears. Right. I said green behind the ears. I combine all kinds of weird phrases. And then I juxtapose syllables or sounds because I'm talking too fast and my brain and my mouth are not in sync. It's just part of my charm, I guess. 855-212-4227. It's not. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And then you can find me online at A-Law Radio. Yes, I'm very geeked up about Divisional Weekend. It is my favorite playoff weekend of the entire, well, it's my favorite football weekend of the entire calendar. Because after this, when you get to championship weekend, while the games themselves may have higher stakes and it may even be better games because you're down to the best two teams still standing, this war of attrition, you get through championship weekend and that's it. You've just got one game left, right? So divisional weekend gives us enough bang for the buck and still there's more promise to come. Although there is some of that, oh no, wow, we don't have any more Saturday football, no more Monday football, no more Thursday football. We're down to Sundays after this. So there's also that kind of bittersweet once you're through divisional weekend. But Monday, which is inauguration day, also features the college football national championship. Producer Pete, which one do you think will have more viewership on TV? Although fair to say that the inauguration, it's on every channel out there. Every single network is going to be airing Inauguration Day. So it's not like you only get it on one or two. I think because the national championship is an ESPN product, it'll be probably on ABC, ESPN. There'll be alternate channels on two and plus and everywhere else, right? There'll be lots of different commentaries that, you know, people are watching the game and you're watching it with them if that floats your boat. Honestly, I've never even watched one of those. The most I can stomach of that is the Mannings during Monday Night Football, but I usually do it with a game that either I don't think is that interesting or they've got a guest I want to hear. So when Belichick first joined them, I was really interested in it. But I can't focus on the game when you've got seven people in different boxes all around the margins. It makes the game pretty small on your screen. And also, they talk so much, all of them, that you really can't hear what's happening on the field as much. So I'm not a huge fan of that, but I can imagine the national championship will be on, I'll go five channels. Are you going over under? Five different network channels.
The national championship will be on under five channels.
You're going under five. Okay, yeah. So we'll count them. Now, when it comes to the inauguration, there might be 20 50. Different networks. Well, around the world, sure. It'll be aired all around the world and translated into different languages.
And not making a political statement at all, considering who the incoming president is, you're going to have people that like him that are going to be watching, and people that do not like him that are going to be watching to see what happens next.
Oh, you think just to hope that he trips and falls flat on his face?
Yeah, you're going
to
get that.
That might happen. Somebody's going to have to pick him up then.
Right, but you're going to get both sides of the aisle really watching this one.
It's not that long ago that we had a president that tripped and fell flat on his face. So it could happen. I could trip and fall flat on my face on Monday, right, too. Right. So I think that considering the number of networks, but it's daytime, though. That's the thing. It's middle of the day on Monday.
But it's a holiday.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Okay. Well, then the answer is obvious. Thing is, it's not a holiday for us. So we have to be here. So in order to watch it, I would have to sleep for 2 hours and wake up. Oh, man, that sucks. Why can't they do it at night so I can actually see it?
You'll see it at night, too. They'll replay it.
Somewhere. Well, I know, but I enjoy watching history when it's unfolding as opposed to when it's on tape.
I like the daytime aspect of it. It's like a Cubs game. You know, like I love watching the Cubs in the daytime.
Do they have the music? Let's go, Cubs. No, it's not Let's Go, Cubs. What's the song?
Go, Cubs, Go. Win.
That's right. Go, Cubs, Go. When I went to Wrigley with some cousins who live in the area, they're huge Cubs fans. They would not allow me to leave. They're like, because the Cubs did win, you have to stay. So yeah. I got there an hour before the game started so I could walk all around Wrigley and the north side and check it all out. But then in the neighborhood, we were not allowed to leave until after the full song had played and everybody had sung it.
Yes, I went there twice before the renovations that they made recently. It's the best ballpark experience I've seen.
It's pretty tremendous.
It's very good.
I would say I'm partial to Fenway only because that's the one I grew up with. But certainly Wrigley Field is iconic. And the fact that it's right there in a neighborhood, it's similar to Fenway where it's tucked into this neighborhood in the city. It's such a great location. I don't know if you remember, and I don't recall how many years ago this was. Maybe, probably not exactly 20 years ago, but maybe. There was a lot of talk about finding a new home for the Red Sox or renovating the one that they had. And so John Henry and his ownership group, they ended up renovating. And there's a lot of things about it that are quirky. The seats are very narrow. So I've gone with people that find it very uncomfortable. I love it though. So they added the Green Monster. They added the right field pavilion. The Green Monster is now, I would say, the most popular ticket at Fenway Park. Yeah. So I think they've done a terrific job. And with Wrigley Field too, it's the same thing. I mean, there are quirky pieces to it, quirky elements to it, and yet it's the original, and it's just so tremendous to be there.
I like the quirkiness of Wrigley over the quirkiness of Fenway. Fenway, I didn't have it. I didn't enjoy it.
All right,
Fenway.
Careful what you say.
I didn't.
What did you not like about Fenway?
I was on the first level in the like toward the back, so my row was near a bathroom. So you always had the line that was forming right by
but that's not Fenway's fault. That's your fault.
Fenway's fault.
No, it's your fault because he's architect. Actually, it opened the same week as the Titanic sank. So it's pre-1920s architecture. Did you know that? That's how I remember when Fenway Park opened.
Oh, wow.
Is that it opened the same week that the Titanic sank.
I was surprised they didn't renovate that part. That would be a nice part to renovate. I don't need to have...
Which part?
Where my seat was.
I can't say that they did it. I do know that they added bathrooms and expanded some concourses. And so now it's a lot easier to access the bathrooms. You can go if you're in one of those areas where you're on the first level, but you're back a little ways, right? You can go up as opposed to having to go down to the lower concourses.
I'd probably go to the Fenway Monster Seats before I'm going to give it another chance at some point and go back to Fenway, but the Monster Seats would probably be my choice to...
Yes. I mean, they're expensive, and you have to get in on them early. In fact, this may not be the case anymore, but the last time I looked, there was almost a lottery. There was some way that you could try to get them, but it's really hard to get them. They're very popular. But yeah, it's super fun. I've gone up there for BP before when there's nobody else up there, and it's awesome to see the home run balls coming at you. It's kind of fun. But Wrigley is great, too. I mean, there's plenty of space. You go up to the top of Wrigley, and it's a really cool view of the city of Chicago. So how do we get on this particular topic? Something to do with old people? No.
No, I mentioned how the inauguration is like going
to Cubs Wrigley, day game. Like a day game.
It is. That atmosphere.
And that led us to this. Okay. Right. I mean, well, I'm a big fan of history and I do enjoy politics. And so I just don't enjoy them here on the show. So I do watch the inaugurations. I mean, regardless of who's getting inaugurated, I watch them. And so this is a day that I'll have to wake up. I'm going to have to wake up early. No one's going to trip. I'm going to make a prediction right now. No one's going to trip. I'm going to stop right there. As I said, we don't talk politics, so I'm not going to make any more comments that amuse me and might amuse you, but would break my rule. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio. If you need to yell at me, don't yell at me. It's a Thursday morning. We're having a nice morning. Let's not yell. And then also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The big news, well, there isn't a ton to pass along. I feel like it's the bated breath of the NFL right now with so many of the coaching jobs still open and guys going through the cycle. But mostly what we want to do is get back to the game so that we can see how these four matchups play out. We were thinking back to 2022 earlier, in which we had seen the four games of divisional weekend all go down to the final play, meaning the outcome was not decided until the final play. Three of the four were settled on field goals with no time left on the clock. And then you had that unforgettable battle between the Bills and the Chiefs. Sorry, Buffalo. 13 seconds left in regulation, and the Chiefs managed to tie the game. Oh my gosh, I can still remember the throw to Travis Kelce to get them into field goal range. Harrison Butker hits the field goal. They go into overtime, and so that one is maybe the unforgettable one, but the other three were all decided on field goals as well, including the Buccaneers and the Rams. That was one of them. So let's see if we can get even half of the games this weekend decided on the final play. That would be pretty incredible. But yeah, there's a lot to look forward to there, though it's not the only thing because there's business taking place as well. Now, last night, just to pivot quickly, last night, both the Clippers and the Lakers were playing games in LA. There was good news about the fires, the firefighters and first responders. Not only are they able to get more of the work done, the containment, the rescue operations that they're on, because the wind shifted and then died down. I've spoken to friends there in the area and they're hopeful that this could be the end now and that the worst is behind them. Though I guess at some point they lowered some of the danger levels and some of the evacuation orders. I guess they have a tier system where it's warnings and you have a color on your phone if you're signed up for it. And so I guess the evacuation numbers, they've kind of backed up on that, which is good. But there's still a lot to do and the fires are not fully contained and there is obviously some danger, but there was optimism coming out of LA. And so the Lakers and the Clippers, they find out that they've got their rescheduled games from the ones that were postponed and they're both playing in LA last night. The Lakers were actually trailing by a dozen at halftime against the Heat, but LeBron has a big fourth quarter. All five of the starters were in double figures. They rally for a win to end what was their three-game skid. You can imagine that win meant a lot to them, meant a lot to J.J. Redick, who's coaching with the heartache of having lost his home and navigating all of those emotions with his kids and his wife and his wife's family too. And LeBron himself also talking about the fires and what it means to be able to play right now.
My condolences, my heartfelt, my prayers, my sincerity goes to every family, either lost loved ones, lost properties, lost anything that had so much meaning to them. It's been a hell of a week for us here in LA, but we got to stick together and we know how to bond together. You know, we apologize for the other night. We didn't give it what we had against San Antonio. The Rams did their job. And then, you know, hopefully we was able to bring a little excitement to the households, wherever you are, you know, to the families that's been affected by this tragedy. But our hearts are with them.
So he was speaking on Spectrum Sportsnet and mentioning the fact that they hadn't taken care of the LA community, right, the other night when they lost. I thought that was interesting. But the Rams did their job, so now we're following up. Also, he has this really cool encounter with a young fan. And if you, I don't know, Pete, if you want to retweet it from our show account, there's photos out there where he's post-game posing with a young girl. And I think it was her mom. But this goes farther back to, I think, pregame or maybe first half when he waves to this young fan who's wearing a Lakers jersey and is sitting courtside. And the camera stays on this little girl and she is over the moon. Like maybe something you'd see with a teenage girl at a Taylor Swift concert, right? Where they're so emotional, they're screaming. In this case, she looked like she was about to burst into tears because LeBron had noticed her. It was pretty sweet. So he finds out at halftime that this is happening. I guess he checked his phone. I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know that was allowable at halftime. I guess we shouldn't be so naive. I'm sure plenty of athletes check their phones at halftime. Anyway, so he's checking his phone. He finds out that this little girl is on camera, that she's so excited, and makes a point to get to her after the game.
Oh, I saw it at halftime. Family friend sent the clip and was like, man, I didn't know you had this type of impact on people. So, I made sure I acknowledged her in the second half. And, I mean, when you got people like that cheering you on, that brings a little bit more excitement. So, she's a wonderful little girl. She's over there climbing around right now. It was special for me and very humbling that I have that type of impact on people.
Yeah, so he gives her some of his gear. He takes a picture with her after the game. And this little girl who's nearly in tears, right, just a moment she's never going to forget. And I have no idea if she's been affected by the fires, her family has been affected by the fires, but she about lost it when LeBron walked by. And then when he found out, he went back and he took a photo with her and gave her some gear. So I thought that was really sweet because it takes, 2 minutes for him, but it's maybe life-changing for her, something that she'll never forget. And he is the father to a daughter, as he was talking about. And so maybe that softened him up a little bit. I can imagine. I remember when Kobe became a father to daughters, right? It really changed him too. So girl dads can sometimes have a softer spot in their hearts than for other little girls. At A-Law Radio, and that's where you can send me nasty tweets, but also really nice tweets, and our Facebook page, too. Coming up, if you missed it, a conversation with Hall of Fame running back Thurman Thomas. I had spoken to him before in person, probably 7-8 years ago. I did a Q&A with him in front of a bunch of Buffalo fans and people inside the media industry. This is our first time to talk since then. And he is still just as entertaining and just as much of a hoot. He laughs all the time, but really fired up about this weekend's game. So thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Here's the snap. Hand off to Cook. Through a hole on the left side. Squirts away and reaches for the end zone, and he is in. James Cook with a 5-yard touchdown run as the Cook is in the kitchen. And the Bills have their first lead of the game.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Chris Brown on Bills Radio. Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas was there because he's there. He's a Buffalo guy. He never left after spending the vast majority of his Hall of Fame career with the Bills. He reps Bills Mafia hard, and it was great to catch up with him on Wednesday afternoon. I started out by asking him how Bills Mafia is feeling as the big game against the Ravens approaches.
Well, I think the Bills Mafia have gotten really, really excited because, you know, it's a Sunday's game. It's at 6:30, so everybody will be able to witness what Bills Mafia is all about. And I'm sure they'll have some pregame shows about, you know, guys jumping off tables, you know, putting ketchup all up in their face and everything. The people are really excited, and I think they're more excited about the last time we played Baltimore up in Baltimore. We lost like 35-10, and so we have them at home where we're 9-0 this year, and it's going to be an exciting football game. It's one of those games where I think maybe the next day or two, it might turn into a classic.
James Cook has played such a huge role in the Bills' success this year, taking some of that pressure off Josh Allen, though, of course, his broad shoulders can carry it. What stands out about the season that Cook has had to this point?
Well, I think it's been the last couple of years. You know, he's getting stronger. You know, when he first got over and got the starting job last year, you know, he was in a, I wouldn't say a difficult role, but, you know, he wanted to take some pressure off of Josh Allen last year. And I think this year he did it. Even though the rushing numbers are not there, I mean, the guy has 16 touchdowns this year, which was unbelievable. And so I think he's gotten bigger. He's gotten stronger. And he knows, you know, coming into his rookie year, he wasn't a man. And now he's the man like he was at the University of Georgia. And they rely on him and his speed and his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. And so when he goes, that means the offensive line is going. And I think they've done a great job this year of really run blocking and pass blocking for Josh Allen. So with James Cook, he's had an unbelievable year this year. But I think what has really helped him is that he's had some guys where he hasn't had to do everything by himself. Ray Davis has come in, and Ty Johnson has been a great third down back for him. So it's given him an opportunity to rest and get his breath on the sideline, and obviously to go back out there and make plays.
Speaking of Ty Johnson, Thurman, what was your reaction to that touchdown in the back of the end zone last week against Denver?
I tell you what, my son was like, that's not a touchdown. I said, that is exactly a touchdown, because there's no way that Ty Johnson would raise his hand and signal to, like, the referee, said, I got it. I mean, it was, and after my son, you know, saw the replay, he was like, yeah, you're right. He was like, well, you know, son, I used to play that position. I've caught a lot of touchdown passes from Jim Kelly, so I know what I'm talking about. So, you know, he's been a great addition to this football team. I actually just had a conversation with him yesterday and talk about some other things off the field, but he's been a great addition to this football team. And like I said, these three guys, the three running backs, and along with Reggie Gilliam as fullback, have done an outstanding job this year.
210 yards rushing against a Denver defense that was pretty stout this season. What does that say to you?
Well, it says that hopefully we get that number this week against the Baltimore Ravens. Because I know that if we can reach that number, that means that we have a really good chance to win the football game. But on the flip side of it, too, if Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry reach that number, they have an opportunity to win the football game. So with the Bills and their running game, and they have to have a controlled game like that again, because you don't want to give Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson too many chances. So if they can, you know, run the ball effectively and take some time off the clock, you know, that would definitely help them to victory.
Yeah, the only team that ran for more yards, of course, the Ravens last week with 299 on the ground, which is pretty incredible. This could turn into one of those games where each team has like three possessions in each half.
It could be. It really could be. I mean, it is going to be a physical football game. I think the temperature is supposed to be 8 degrees. And yeah, so you know what? I am so glad that I have been retired for about 25 years now, because I would not want to be out there playing right now. But if you look at both of these football teams, you know, the last time that the Baltimore Ravens were here was back, I think, in 2021 or 2020, when, you know, we were going through the COVID situation. We actually won a playoff game against them up here. So we're looking forward to it, to having a packed house here at the Highmark Stadium. And I think this team and Sean McDermott and the guys are ready to go.
Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas with us from Buffalo. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You mentioned the cold. What is it like to play in that extreme chill? And it's going to be dark, probably wind chills. Yeah. What's that like, Thurman?
Well, you know what? It's fine, because you know that you'll get a check Monday morning. So nice. I mean, everything will be fine, but it's football, right? And, you know, you play in hot conditions, and not too many teams get ready. And that's why it's so vital for the Buffalo Bills, whether they get the number two seed or the number one seed. At least they can have an opportunity to play at least two games at home if they get the number two seed. And I think that's very vital for this football team, because, you know what, they live up here. Sean McDermott has them practicing up here in this type of condition. And we didn't have three of our best players against them in week number four. Terrell Bernard, Taron Johnson, and Matt Milano, and all those three guys are back now. So, and hopefully they'll make a difference. And I told Sean McDermott, I texted him Monday morning. I said, everybody in the organization, including Bills Mafia, need to get an extra lift in the weight room this week.
Offensive linemen wearing short sleeves. Did you think they were crazy?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. But you know what? I think after my first or second year, I got kind of used to it. I was like, you know what? If those guys can do it, I can do it. So I started doing it. And, you know, being a guy from down south in Houston, Texas, you know, I'm not, I mean, it gets 30, and I'm freezing. But up here, you know what? Marv Levy had us practicing in it. We were ready for it. And, you know, Bruce Smith, all the defensive players, most of the defensive players were going out there, no sleeves on. And so I was like, you know what? I'm a part of this organization. Why not join it? And I got used to it. And it's a mental aspect of it, too. When we would get like the Miami Dolphins up here in late December or January, and you see all those guys with 2 and 3 layers on, we knew that we had them right away.
Mm. Okay, Thurman, the loaded question. Who is your NFL MVP?
My NFL MVP? Well, I mean, I'm going with Josh. I mean, I know Lamar has had a great year, and he probably will win the MVP this year, but I'm going to go with Josh. But if it wasn't Josh, you know, I would go with Saquon Barkley. I'm a running back, so a running back hasn't won this award in I don't know how long. So, you know, I was pulling for Saquon Barkley to get 2,000 yards, you know, and break Eric Dickerson's record. So I thought, if he did that, he would have an opportunity to win the MVP, but obviously yes, they didn't let him play. And but you can't take it away from Lamar Jackson. I mean, he's had a hell of a year, but so has our quarterback too, especially losing Stephon Diggs last year. They say, oh, we didn't have a number one receiver. And these guys have spread the ball around. They've scored 13 different players that have scored touchdowns this year. So I know Lamar might win it, but I think before Josh Allen's career is over with, he will win a couple.
I'm not sure if there is a more passionate fan base in the NFL than Bills Mafia, though I'm sure many other groups of fans would say, hey, we've got a claim on that. But I know from my time working in Western New York, Syracuse, Rochester, Bills Mafia is something special. What would it mean to get back to a Super Bowl again, finally, Thurman?
Oh, my God. I mean, it would mean so much to this city. And I think with this football team, it's not so much that we get back to one. I think with the success that Sean McDermott has had since he's been here since 2017, you know, we need to get back and win one. I think that's the goal. I don't think Bills Mafia, this organization of the city of Buffalo, wants to be 0-5. I think it would be heartbreaking, but I think if they do reach that opportunity to get back to the Super Bowl, it would mean so much to these fans around here, because we've been through the jokes and we've been through whatever people want to call us, you know, losing 4 Super Bowls in a row. And I had an interview with somebody not too long ago, and they would say, what would it mean to you guys to win one? I said, if we win one, will we be satisfied with that one, or will we want more? And everybody kind of stood still and like, I just want one. I was like, okay. That's not kind of the answer I was looking for. I was looking to have multiple, but you just want to win one. This town and this football team and Bills Mafia, we're ready to explode. There will not be a party like Bills Mafia if we end up winning the championship.
Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas with us from Buffalo, getting set for divisional weekend, another big opportunity for the Bills and for Bills Mafia. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I know that there's a core group of you Hall of Famers from those teams, and the last time I spoke to you, which was a few years ago, you talked about how you're pretty tight. So how is the group feeling as it gets closer?
The group is ready to go. I mean, all the guys are really coming in. I think Darryl's coming in. Bruce is coming in. Will Wolford is coming in. So, yeah, the guys are ready. They know how important this game is to the city of Buffalo and Bills Mafia. We're one of the top teams in the National Football League, and Baltimore is right there with us. And basically what it is that we're all gunning for Kansas City. That's what we're gunning for. I give all the credit in the world to Houston maybe even having a chance against Kansas City. But the Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills – these two teams owe Kansas City something, and I think that's in the back of our minds. Yeah, you don't want to look forward and try to look to that AFC championship game, but this could be like the game of the year right here between these two teams. So I think both teams will be ready to go out there and put it on the line and see which one comes out to play Kansas City next week.
Thurman, beyond the football and the excitement, we get to talk about the gridiron greats and the ability to help some Hall of Famers and some players who came before. Why is it important to you to work with the gridiron greats?
Well, the guys that played way before me in the 60s, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way up to now, you know, they didn't have the $1 million contracts that the guys have today. And, you know, some of those guys, after they finished their season in football, you know, that Monday morning, they were back at work. And so I understand how important. I've been associated with Gridiron Grace over the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years now. And this is my first opportunity to really, you know, be really a part of it. And, you know, it's all about, you know, helping guys, you know, medical bills, financial bills, and things like that. And I'm so glad to be working with the Gridiron Grace and Southern Recipe Pork Rinds. If you go to porkrinds.com to enter Fan Appreciation Day, which is February 9th, 2025, you can win two tickets to the Super Bowl next year in Santa Clara. You know, it's a great time for everybody to go to, like I said, porkrinds.com and the Gridiron Grace Assistance Fund to donate to these guys, because a lot of them are hurting. But you know what? I think Mike Dicker has done an outstanding job. Him and Ron Jaworski are really putting this out there. And, you know, Ron Jaworski, I mean, his party at the Super Bowl is one of the biggest parties there ever is now at the Super Bowl. And you know, all that money and everything that they do goes right to the Gridiron Greats. And I'm so happy to be a part of it right now.
Conversation with Thurman Thomas, Hall of Fame running back from Buffalo. Of course, speaks very highly of the Ravens, knows what they're capable of. And did you catch it there at the end? Believes this might actually be the game of the year, because either of these teams, Baltimore or Buffalo, gunning for Kansas City. It's all about beating Kansas City. Sorry, Houston. He's actually a Houston area native, but sorry, Texans. He seems to believe that whoever wins this game, well, gets a shot at Arrowhead next weekend. At A-Law Radio, I did share the evergreen link to our podcast on both our Twix and our Facebook last night, because I want you to have it. It's the same link. The podcast just keeps reloading with the most recent episodes at the top. So you can find it wherever you get your podcast, like Spotify, or my husband's automatically load to Apple. But we do have a link to our website as well. 855-212-4227. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. The coaching carousel continues to spin. Both Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn talking about their experience as coordinators who are in high demand for head coaching interviews. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network, Sports Flash.
All right, Amel, the Bills and Ravens will take center stage on Sunday as two teams looking to take that next step, along with a pair of upper echelon quarterbacks assumed to finish 1-2 in the MVP race this year. But Josh Allen not buying into the thought of it being him against Lamar Jackson.
In the history of football, I've never really played against another quarterback. I've played against their defense, and just taking it one day at a time, trying to have a good week of practice, and then controlling what I can control. And it's attitude and effort, and it's how we come out here and just try to put our best foot forward and try to execute on Sunday.
Flip side, Lamar Jackson says he's on a mission, not about to spend time, concerned about the conditions he's going to walk into in Buffalo.
I'm trying to win, so it really don't matter. I can't go into a game and be like, man, it's too cold. I can't make things happen. You know, coach, they'll probably send me home. Eric, they'll be probably trying to come, you know, have me go up there, upstairs and talk to him and stuff. So I got to lock in the cold.
Checking the NBA, where RJ Barrett had a big night to help the Raptors shock the Celtics.
Toronto front court with the orange and a 12-point lead. 2:44 down the stretch we come. Barrett curls into the lane, drive, lay it up and in. Toronto by 14, 108-94, 2.5 to go.
22 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists for R.J. Barrett as the Raptors dominate the Celtics, 110-97. Call courtesy of the Raptors Radio Network. Rest of your scores, Warriors held off the T-Wolves 116-115, Steph Curry with 31. Lakers knocked off the Heat 117-108. Bucks ripped the Magic 122-93, Damian Lillard with 30. Knicks outlast the Sixers in overtime 125-119, Jalen Brunson poured in 38. Rockets buried the Nuggets 128-108, Hawks lit up the Bulls 110-94. Pelicans 119, Mavericks 116, DeJounte Murray with 30. Clippers just overwhelmed the Nets 126-67. Grizzlies too much for the Spurs, 129-115, and the Hornets took out the Jazz, 117-112. College hoops, second-ranked Iowa State overwhelmed number 9 Kansas, 74-57. Michigan State top Penn State, 90-85. Tennessee overpowered Georgia, 74-56. Houston erased West Virginia, 70-54. Purdue bounced Washington, 69-58. And UNLV surprised Utah State, 65-62. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, like us on Facebook. Our handle is INF Sportsnet. That's INF Sportsnet for our Facebook page. This is the Infinity Sports Network.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Good morning to you. It's a Thursday. I like Thursdays. Thursdays don't generally, well, they don't have football anymore at night, but they don't generally have a lot on the schedule at home either because we usually push it back. All right, we're almost to the weekend. We'll just wait to do it till the weekend. So we kind of clear the deck on Thursdays. So, yeah, it feels like, whoo, the worst of the weekend is behind. And maybe that's because when you're on a football clock, you spend Tuesday and Wednesday kind of catching up. And then Thursday is like a, all right, we can exhale. But it's not long now. Meanwhile, you've got this business of football and this coaching carousel spinning furiously. There were reports out there on Wednesday that Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator of the Lions, prefers to join the Jets. All right, so here's my thing. If you prefer to join the Jets and the Jets know that you prefer to join the Jets, that might be the best you're going to do. I don't know how many people out there prefer to join the Jets. But if Aaron Glenn is making it known, maybe he's leaking it, his camp is leaking it, that he prefers to work with the New York Jets, I feel like they should jump on that and not worry about what else they have.
Well, that's why I wasn't poo-pooing the Rex Ryan candidacy. He was another guy that wanted to join the Jets and wanted to be there. I think a lot of what their problem is ownership, and you need somebody that buys into what the owner is doing there. It's not a conventional football system. And if Aaron Glenn buys into it, they should embrace it, like you said.
Well, he's a former Jet, which is part of it, right? So he clearly has some love for the Jets and the organization, though it was completely different at the time. But remember, he was a cornerback who was drafted by the Jets. And for those of you who don't know, he played from the mid-90s until after the turn of the century before he ended up then in Houston, Dallas, and then a couple of other places at the end of his career. But the fact that he is a Pro Bowler and a former Jets Pro Bowler and that that's where he would like to land a head coaching gig, I think significant. Again, if you're the Johnsons, yes, Rex Ryan wants to go back to New York. But if you're the Johnsons and you've got a guy who played for you, who understands how desperate they are for a change in culture, and you know that the Jets are often predicated on defense. They've got some great defensive pieces, too. So Aaron Glenn's not going in without anything to work with on the defensive side of the ball. But he wants to be in New York. I don't think that the Johnson brothers can do any better than that.
And didn't Glenn turn down an interview with the Patriots because of he thought it was I believe it was Aaron Glenn. I'm blanking.
Hold down interview with Patriots.
Yeah,
let's see if that's true. Aaron Glenn explains why he turned down Patriots head coach interview request. Oh, so that must probably part of his, because he'd made some comments yesterday. So it looks like it, he might have explained it yesterday. Yeah, Lions Aaron Glenn breaks silence on turning down Pat's interview request. You may do a quick search and see if you can find it. But he was talking about, you know, so far what he's learned from these job interviews he's done.
The one thing that I get out of all these interviews is, man, I'm going to be myself. And either you like it or you don't. If you don't, all good. I keep telling you that I have a great job here. And if you like it, if it's an opportunity I think that's best for me and my family, then we'll take a look at it. But had a really good time, you know, over the bye week looking at those. But now, man, we're all locked in, ready to go and play this game against Washington.
He's interviewed with the Jets, the Saints, the Bears, the Raiders, and the Jaguars over the past week. And here's what he said about turning down the Patriots interview request. Quote, I've never felt anything against that organization. It just wasn't the best situation for me. Yeah. Well, and I don't know why. Only that we know the Patriots first asked to interview Ben Johnson. A couple days later, they put in the request for Aaron Glenn. And maybe, I'm just speculating here, he felt like it was just to fulfill the Rooney Rule because it was evident that Bob Kraft wanted to hire Mike Vrabel. Now, last year they didn't have to go through the Rooney Rule steps because they were hiring Gerard Mayo, so they didn't have to jump through that hoop, if you will. But in this particular case, I am sure that there are coaches out there. Remember Lovie Johnson talked about – Lovie Smith, sorry. Lovie Smith talked it about a few years ago where he said, I don't care if they're asking me to interview simply to fulfill the requirement. I'm going to interview anywhere that I'm asked. But I don't think that's the opinion or the attitude or the approach of everyone. And he didn't say that. But there maybe because he felt like they asked other guys first and they had gotten to Ben Johnson a couple of days before they requested him, that he didn't want to be a token if that was what was going on.
At the time when they asked him, it was already definitely a conclusion that it looked like Vrabel was going there. It was just a matter of when. Mm-hmm. So, I agree with that. And look, that in the eyes of Jet fans, that'll put him another positive mark on Aaron Glenn because
that he wants to be there.
He wants to be there, and he turned down the Patriots.
Adding that to it, did not interview with the Patriots. Instead, wants to be with the New York Jets. So that's the report out there. Now, Ben Johnson, he's also interviewed with a ton of different teams. And so he feels like a year removed from when he first became a red hot candidate, that was last year, that he's better prepared.
This go around, I've been a lot more prepared for the types of questions that they've been asking. I've also changed my frame of mind a little bit. And instead of worrying solely about the offense and what we're doing right here, I've been able to have off seasons and summers to think about big picture view, what a program would look like where I'm running it. And so I think that away, I'm a lot more prepared for the questions that come my way and much more comfortable answering them.
Good for him. Now, you remember he was in line, maybe that's too strong, but he was considered to be one of the top choices of the Commanders' new ownership, and he ended up deciding that he would stay with Detroit. He called it unfinished business, which I could certainly understand. They're on the cusp of potential history. You'd want to be part of it. And obviously the weapons that he has around him, he's got a lot to work with. At the same time, there were also the stories and the reports out there that he really didn't like the way the interview went with the Commanders' ownership. He actually felt like they didn't know much about football, but tried to pretend like they knew a lot about football. Now, I don't know if that story is true. I know I heard it from multiple places that he was kind of put off by how they handled the interview, but who knows? That could just be something that someone put out there and it became popular to repeat it. So I don't actually know that for sure. But there is, of course, a ton of truth to every interview is a good experience. What it teaches you, how it prepares you so that you are more equipped, you're better equipped for the situation when it happens again. I've always told young people that I mentor that. Absolutely. Take every interview, even if it's a job you never think you'll take. First of all, it may surprise you. Second of all, it's a good experience. It's a great experience to go and talk to people that you've never met before and try to sell yourself and sell what you bring to the table and hear what it is that they have to say. So good for Ben. All right, we'll talk to you tonight. Have a great Thursday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!